Craig Unger in the latest issue of The New Republic has a story of major consequence about the president and Russia. The title is Trump's Russian Laundromat. Good morning, Craig Unger.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and this is a story, it is apparent, that took some time to research. You've had to go through some, go to some places and through some information that others have not. How long did it take to put it together?
Well, I spent 2 or 3 months on it, and frankly, I've been looking at this since Trump was elected, and trying to go back to the beginning. That is, a lot of people obviously have been talking about his connection to Russia, and I wanted to see when was Trump first compromised by Russia, and that brought me back to 1984.
33 years ago, a fellow named David Bogatin, is that how it's pronounced?
That sounds pretty good.
Okay, he went shopping for apartments in New York City, and what happened?
Well, David Bogatin was a Russian, and he was, most importantly, he had family ties to the most powerful crime family in Russia, the crime family of Semyon Mogilevich, and he didn't seem to have any way of, he wasn't particularly gainfully employed, but he met with Donald Trump. This is just after Trump Tower had been opened. This is Trump Tower, of course, is the crown jewel of Donald Trump's real estate empire. It's where he lived. And when it opened in 1983, it made him into an international celebrity. And Bogatin just went there, met with Trump, and bought not one or two condos. He bought 5 luxury condominiums. And the state attorney general, who later investigated Bogatin, said that this was money laundering. And I believe this is the first time that Trump real estate was used to launder money from the Russian mafia.
Now, you note that Trump Tower had people like Johnny Carson living there, Steven Spielberg, even Sophia Loren. So the fact that a Russian is living there, is that significant based on the information you have unearthed?
Well, I don't think it's particularly unusual for anyone of any nationality to live there. What was astonishing, and one of the things I did, is I sort of went through databases of people who had lived there, and every time I got to a Russian name, I started researching them. And what I found is that I found at least 13 people who either lived in Trump Tower, worked there, did business there, who were tied to the Russian mafia in one way or another, or to corrupt Russian oligarchs. And to be honest, I began to think that this was merely the tip of the iceberg. One of the very unusual things about Trump Tower, when it was set up in 1983, it was one of only 2 buildings in New York at the time in which anonymous people could buy condos but shield their identity through shell companies like limited liability corporations. So this was set up in a way as if it was a powerful way to launder money. It's interesting to watch what happened to Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. And since Putin has been there, it's had over $1.3 trillion in flight capital. When we say Russia is a mafia state, it means that organized crime is really part of, and it is an adjunct to Putin and his power. Putin has weaponized it. He uses it as a powerful tool in foreign policy. So when you see this intrusion of Russian organized crime into America, and here in New York, we saw the rise of the Russian mafia in Brooklyn for many years during the 80s and so forth. But this was happening at a much more powerful level. And from what I've seen, it looks like, you know, frankly, a center of operation for the Russian mafia was Trump Tower. This is the home of the President of the United States.
All right, you're tying this fellow David Bogatin to the gentleman you mentioned earlier, Semyon Mogilevich. This Semyon Mogilevich, he is a person regarded by many as a sinister individual. What do you know about him?
Well, I got the FBI files on him, and they tie him to everything from drug running, prostitution, various extortion schemes, tax evasion schemes, pump and dump stock scandals, and the like. But his greatest skill and what he's really famous for is for money laundering. And the Russian mafia, again, it's very different from the American mafia, that here we tend to think of John Gotti or Tony Soprano or The Godfather. But the Russian mafia is different. And Mogilevich has a personal relationship with Vladimir Putin. And he was also entrusted with laundering money, not just for his own crime gang, but for rival gangsters. So this raises a lot of questions about the magnitude of money laundering and the extent to which Trump real estate was used.
And then you note that Donald Trump, and you have the photographic evidence, made his first trip to Russia in 1987. This was before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Why was Donald Trump in the Soviet Union at that time?
Well, at the time, Trump Tower in New York had gotten enormous amounts of attention, and the Russians, or the Soviets rather, were really interested in having a Trump Tower in Moscow. And this was the first time Trump had been there. It was his introduction to a lot of powerful people in Russia. It was also the point at which you first start to see that Trump actually had presidential ambitions. And when he returned from Moscow, he went to New Hampshire, of all places, as if he was dipping his toes in the presidential waters by going to the side of what, one of the first presidential primaries as the 1988 election were approaching. He also took out a full-page ad in the Washington Post and the New York Times, in which he put forth a foreign policy that's very much like what you hear him articulating today, that it was very anti-Europe. It was sort of anti-NATO. And it was very much the kind of foreign policy that Vladimir Putin loves.
How is all of this relevant, Craig Unger, to the investigation that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, is conducting right now?
Well, I think it's enormously relevant. That is, I see what happened taking place in two phases. If you go back to 1984, it's sort of money laundering, pure and simple. And the Russian mafia wanted their money laundered, and Trump got to sell condos. So it was a match made in heaven. By 2002, things had changed enormously, and Trump had overexpanded enormously in Atlantic City, where he owned several casinos, and he emerged from that $4 billion in debt. He owed $4 billion to 70 banks. He had $800 million in personal debt, and not a single bank in the Western world would lend him money.
When you say personal debt, this was $800 million that he had personally guaranteed, which is something that billionaires generally don't like to do.
Exactly. And about that time, around 2002, a company called Bayrock leased space in Trump Towers. This is a real estate development company, and it was largely owned and financed by Russians. One of the key figures in it is a man named Felix Sater, who was its managing director, and his father was part of the Mogilevich crime gang. So he had ties to organized crime himself, and he'd also been convicted of two felonies. A lot of the money came from Russians or oligarchs from the former Soviet Union who were right there in Trump Tower, and they made an offer to Trump. They said to him, we want to do business with you, and they made him an offer he could not refuse. That is, they put up hundreds of millions of dollars, as much as $1 billion, to develop new Trump Towers. They said Trump himself didn't have to put up a penny, and they would license his name and give him 18% of the profits. And that is how the Trump Soho is built here in downtown New York.
We're about to go to a break, but the president has said he has no business dealings in Russia. Could he technically be right?
Well, if you define it very narrowly, the point is, I'm making is he has a lot of business dealings with Russians, and especially the Russian mafia. And that's what's disturbing. That's how he was compromised. I mean, just think of it. If the president...
Okay, we do have to pause. And before we went to the break, you were talking about some of the areas where you believe the president could be compromised. How so?
Right. Well, I think the question is not that whether he did business in Russia, it's his business dealings with Russians. And, you know, I interviewed a federal prosecutor, former federal prosecutor named Kenneth McCallion. And he said, look, it's very simple. The Russians, they saved his bacon. There would have been no comeback for Donald Trump. He would not be in the White House today if it were not for the Russian mafia. And what you see here is first those two phases. First, it seems to be straight ahead money laundering in the early days, and which Trump can claim perhaps, and perhaps he did not know who he was selling his condos to. But after 2002, he was in a hole. He never, I don't think you can run for president if you owe $4 billion and have $800 million in personal debt. It's a tremendous amount of money, and it's not exactly good on your resume. And the Bayrock, which essentially was putting forth Russian money and money from oligarchs of the former Soviet Union, is what came to his aid. As Kenneth McCallion said, they saved his bacon, and they transformed him from being many billions of dollars in debt to being a billionaire again.
You note that Russians spent at least $98 million on Trump properties in Florida. How did this happen?
Right. Well, when you look at Trump condos all over the world, and by now there are over 30 Trump towers. I'm talking about buildings as high as 70 or 80 stories that have luxury condominiums in them. And many of them, he's just licensing his name to it. He's not even developing himself. And this includes those condos in places like Sunny Isles, Florida. And what you see is a huge number of the sales are going to Russians. And in many cases, it's impossible to determine exactly how much. I believe in Sunny Isles, Florida, there are about 170 units that have sold. These are multi-million dollar condos, by the way. And about 170 of them were sold to Russians or people of the former Soviet Union. In Trump World Tower here in New York, there's another one near the UN that has the floors of 76th through 83rd floors are dominated by Russians. You have the same in Panama City, Panama, where there's a Trump tower. So this is going on all over the world. One of the interesting things that we've covered was that since he was elected president, about 70% of the sales have gone to shell companies, that is, to limited liability corporations, where it's really impossible for the public, including reporters, to figure out who is the real owner of the property. So what I've uncovered in this article is really the tip of the iceberg. Obviously, as a reporter, I do not have subpoena power, but Special Counsel Robert Mueller does have subpoena power. And I strongly suspect this is a direction he will be going in.
All right. Now, the president with the New York Times 2 days ago said he would view it a violation if Robert Mueller were to examine his finances or his family's finances. Is this setting the stage for a possible firing of Mr. Mueller?
They are absolutely on a collision course, and I don't know how this will play out exactly, but Mueller is going to, I mean, I'm certain he's going in this direction. If you look at who he's hired a woman named Lisa Page, who has considerable expertise in the Russian mafia. He's also hired another guy named Andrew Weissman, who knows an awful lot about money laundering. So I'd be surprised if they don't follow the sort of roadmap I outline in my article And yes, that means going into the Trump's finances, which he's tried to keep so secret for so long.
Well, when he ran for president, Donald Trump's an exceptional man in many ways, if your story is accurate, and much of it is documented. But how could he have thought that he would be able to rule the world, the free world, without much of this becoming part of the public domain?
Well, that's the question I can't answer. And all I can say is he's gotten away with it as a private citizen his entire life. And one of the key things in this is the loophole in money laundering is real estate. The two best ways to launder money, and you know, I've said the flight capital is over $1 trillion. That means you need to launder a lot of money. And one of the best used to be casinos, but there's a $10,000 limit. And Trump had casinos, and by the way, they've been fined by the U.S. Treasury Department, the Financial Crimes Unit, for an enormous number of violations. But the $10,000 limit means if you want to launder billions of dollars, you're going to have to send a boatload of gamblers over to the casino. Whereas in real estate, you can buy a $2 million condo, a $5 million condo. You can, through a shell company, you don't have to disclose where the money came from. And you could even trade it back and forth and sell it back and forth between your colleagues multiple times per year. And with roughly 10,000 units all over the world, there's an enormous amount of money laundering that might well have taken place.
David in Atlanta. David, please be brief. You're on with Craig Unger, the author of Trump's Russian Laundromat in the latest issue of the New Republic. Hi, David.
Two quick questions. Are we talking about drug money being laundered or money that was obtained by thievery? And also, even if President Trump would grant amnesty to his associates, are any New York and other local state laws have been violated that he cannot pardon?
Those are really good questions. And, you know, specifically, it's hard for me to identify where all the money comes from. But I think you're talking in broad terms about two sources. One is Russian mafia, where, well, could be drug money or prostitution money or however they make their money, and they just want to wash it. They want to cleanse it, essentially. The oligarchs are essentially mobsters who got into legitimate businesses. And when the Soviet Union fell, you had a huge number of industries that had been owned by the state and were being privatized, but they don't have an investor class like we do on Wall Street. And the only people who had the money to take them over were essentially mobsters who were getting in for pennies on the dollar. They would, I mean, the entire Russian automobile industry, for example, was privatized for $4 million. Or a huge business like Gazprom, which is worth tens of billions of dollars, was bought out for, I believe it was, you know, for just a tiny fraction of that. They will siphon off money from, say, you have an enormous energy trade between Russia and Ukraine, and the oligarchs siphon off money from that trade, and they can siphon off $1 billion a year or more. And that's the kind of money we're talking about. And you can, I mean, a lot of what I'm trying to do, and I think
all right.
Mueller...
We're short on time, Craig. I wanted to get to David's other question, and that's the story in the Washington Post is the president's considering pardoning himself if he can do that. Would he be exposed to state charges, perhaps, even if he were to pardon himself on federal any potential federal violations?
Yes, he can be, and the state attorney general in New York, Eric Schneiderman, is pursuing some of those charges. So I think he is at risk.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. The story's in the New Republic. Craig Unger, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.